On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, glad you could be here. A package of bills introduced by Republicans last month aims to tighten eligibility for unemployment benefits and Medicaid coverage with an end goal of improving the state's tight labor market. Governor Evers said at a news conference Thursday in La Crosse, we have record low unemployment and the fewest number of unemployed people in our state's history. But
we know that throughout this pandemic, there are communities and families that have seen disproportionate outcomes and worries regarding health and economic well-being.
That's courtesy of WIZM FM. Have you received unemployment benefits recently? What difference did it make? Did you get health coverage through Medicaid? Would losing it make you more likely to return to the workforce? 800-642-1234. Abby Barlow-Wiley is Legislative and Compliance Director for Legal Action of Wisconsin. Abby, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So Legal Action of Wisconsin speaking out against 7 of the 10 bills in this collection that could restrict benefits that unemployed people can receive. How does your legal aid organization decide which bills to weigh in on?
Thank you. Yes. So Legal Action has, we provide free civil legal aid to low-income people in 39 of Wisconsin's southern counties. So we see a broad range of what poverty looks like from urban and rural areas, old and young, across every ethnic and racial background. So when thinking about the impact that bills would have on our clients, we think about the experiences that our clients have that they bring to us, their struggles, their needs, and really look at legislation to try to bring their voice to the legislature.
Perhaps footsteps that a lawmaker crafting a bill might not think about or be in touch with?
That's exactly right. Unfortunately, people with low incomes often don't have much voice, don't have much touch with their members of the legislature, don't have that in their priority list of getting through the day to call up their legislator and let them know what life is like for them as they're just struggling to get by every day.
Were you surprised at all at this package of legislation? Did anything cause you pause that really struck you as a surprise?
Well, look, I mean, if the pandemic has taught us anything, it is the precariousness of our health and economic security. We know that even before the pandemic, 40% of Americans didn't have $400 in the bank for emergency expenses. And in the pandemic economy, we saw people lose their livelihoods, right? And found the rug suddenly pulled out from under them, including many people who had never experienced or expected to experience poverty before. I think what's surprising is this rush to act like we are out of the pandemic economy, when for many people, they are still living in it. Even though the average state unemployment number is good, we are still seeing people struggle. We are still seeing an intense reliance on benefits as people search for family-sustaining employment. And so to answer your question, what's surprising me is that, you know, we should be, the idea that now is the time to be making it harder for people to access benefits, it's not what people need.
Hmm. Abby Barlow-Wiley with us, Legislative and Compliance Director for Legal Action of Wisconsin. We're discussing this collection of bills that would change Wisconsin's unemployment compensation system. With your insights, 800-642-1234, have you received unemployment benefits in the pandemic? What difference did it make to your life? What was that process like? You can join in with your insights on these bills and what you want to know about them. 800-642-1234. Let's start with Medicaid, Abby. One of these bills, and I say Medicaid, but Badger Care, as we call it here, someone who turns down a job or turns down a promotion that pays more than the maximum income ceiling to qualify for Medicaid. What concern does this bill cause for you?
This is a very concerning bill for our clients. You know, employers are not privy to employees' personal lives. They might not understand that their employees are working for multiple employers. Our clients often work multiple part-time low-wage jobs. But under this bill, employers could put employees' critical health care coverage at risk by reporting them, claiming that they refused the job or hours, in order to stay on Medicaid without having to confess any credibility to that claim. But we know at Legal Action, the truth is that there are many reasons why somebody might turn down a job offer or an increase in hours. People with low incomes have caregiving responsibilities, even if they don't have children, caring for a sick parent or spouse, a grandparent caring for grandchildren in a child care emergency, mm-hmm. an uncle who watches his sister's kids so she can go to AA meetings. And maybe the job offer is 30 miles away, but your car was repossessed last week. Maybe you're a woman working at a gas station and your employer is asking you to add hours from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. on your shift. Maybe you're dealing with depression, right? We see a lot of people struggling with mental illness, and maybe you simply just cannot handle the additional work. So for whatever reason, the job or hours might just not be right for you. And that's true for everyone, right? Anytime any of us are considering a job offer or different hours or a different schedule, there are a lot of factors that we take into consideration to determine whether that job, whether those hours are right for us and for our family.
Because something else is going to have to give.
Exactly. That's right. And what's so upsetting is that this bill would push the most vulnerable people living on low incomes, into accepting work or increased hours, regardless of whether it works for them or their families. You know, it's a lot of these bills are I think in their best light, they're saying there's fraud here. We need to address fraud. We don't see fraud. And this bill does not, it's simply not fraudulent to say no to a job or to an increase in hours. But under this bill, people could lose their critical health care coverage nonetheless.
It's interesting, too, in the written testimony that Legal Action Wisconsin put forth on this, that this wouldn't require an employer's report to be, quote, credible, and it opens the door for employers to report an employee anytime someone rejects an employee's offer. What power dynamic concerns do you see there?
Right. I mean, incredible power dynamic concerns, right? Employers already have tremendous power over employees, especially for people who work low-wage jobs. Their hours, their wages are determined by their employer. They lack flexibility. They often don't have any sick leave, any paid time off at all to deal with emergencies. And so the idea that we would be increasing that power dynamic on the side of the employer is very troubling. You know, it, you could really, when I look at this bill, what I think it's doing is punishing low-income people for being poor.
This other bill would require the state health agency to review whether people are eligible for Medicaid every 6 months instead of right. every 12 months, which DHS currently does. Why would checking eligibility every 6 months lead to more churn and into more coverage disruptions?
There are several reasons. For one, it is not easy to apply for benefits. And when you are a person on low and living on low incomes and you have variable wages and hours, people move a lot, right? They're either seeking safer housing, they are facing eviction or foreclosure. There are a lot of reasons why people with low incomes who are able to work tend to move around a lot. You know, simply one example of how this bill could affect someone is that you might not receive a notice that your eligibility is up for redetermination and not find out that you have lost your critical healthcare coverage until you're at the hospital seeking mm-hmm. care, only because you moved during the year, right? 1 year is what the wages and salaries are based on. It's what our clients are expecting. It simply creates more burden for people who are trying to get these benefits so that they can live. And it creates more administrative burden. So one reason why somebody might lose their coverage or see a gap in coverage is simply because the administrative burden on the agencies processing these applications is overwhelming. I mean, this bill more than doubles the work of agencies right now processing applications without sending any additional resources to help manage the increased workload.
Legal Action of Wisconsin attorney Abby Barlow-Wiley focuses on legal representation justice for low-income people. Are you an employer? Have you been able to hire enough workers? Do you think restricting public benefits would increase your labor pool? Has your family relied on food share? Has it helped fill gaps? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Abby Barlow-Wiley here on the Ideas Network. You are with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republican lawmakers advancing a package of bills would add new requirements for jobless workers to maintain unemployment assistance and put a new limit on eligibility for Medicaid coverage, as we've been talking about. Join in your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Legal Action of Wisconsin legislative director and attorney Abby Barlow-Wiley is with us for about five more minutes. Let's bring in Becky now in Houstisford. Hi, Becky. What's on your mind?
Oh, hello. And I want to say thank you for Ms. Barlow-Wiley for bringing this important subject to the fore. Adding to what she said, which is so pertinent, as the bill is written, there are no guarantee that the hours offered will be permanent for the employees. So even if they'd want to take them, if taking them, then they'd suddenly be taken away. They would be without the hours and without the benefits they had been previously receiving that enabled them to survive. There's no guarantee that the employers will pay overtime for the additional hours, even though they might be nights or weekends. And there's no guarantee that in taking those hours, even the most eager employee, if in taking those hours they then lose child care and lose health care, they're going backwards. And it costs them more. It costs our society more if they get so sick they have to go to the emergency room.
Becky, thank you for bringing this up. And Abby, Becky making a number of other points here, including some backslide that could be possible.
Absolutely. You raised great points, Becky. You know, we know that people who experience disruptions in their healthcare coverage are more likely to delay care, receive less preventative care, refill prescriptions less often, and have more emergency department visits. As a result, we know it's harder for them to get work, more likely for them to lose their jobs. Research has shown time and again that being in poor health is associated with increased risk of job loss or unemployment, while access to affordable healthcare helps people to maintain their health and promotes their ability to obtain and maintain employment. So the idea that we would be trying to find creative ways to kick people off of their healthcare coverage isn't only going to hurt people like our clients and make their lives even harder. It's also going to be bad for the state and for the economy.
Well, let's turn this for a moment. Lawmakers here promoting these measures, saying they're trying to get more people into the workforce. Abby, what would help more people find jobs and land jobs that are life-sustaining?
Yeah, you know, these bills, they don't actually help people find jobs, right? These bills take a stick approach, hoping that people will feel threatened enough by the changes to magically find the family sustaining jobs that they haven't been able to secure. So what would actually help our clients would be to address the actual barriers to employment that we see our clients run up against every day. So access to reliable transportation is a big one. A job might be 30 minutes away by car or 2 hours away by bus, and our clients may not have working or reliable cars and can't afford an extra 4 hours of childcare or the cost of ride sharing on their already low wages. Or, you know, in Wisconsin, people can get their driver's licenses suspended because of their inability to pay fees, right? Basically, you can get your driver's license suspended because you're in poverty. And then your choices are, do I risk getting pulled over and facing increased fees and increased tickets on my way to work, or do I not get to work? So increasing access to transportation would be big. Increasing access to childcare for birth to three and beyond, to family care. You know, a lot of people provide care to their elderly, disabled family members but receive very little, if any, compensation. Addressing the affordable housing crisis, when, you know, housing instability is a major issue for our clients that takes up a lot of their days seeking safe, stable housing for themselves and their families. And in fact, about 50%, a little bit under 50% of our clients are people with children in the home. And, you know, if we were to expand Medicaid, right, we are one of 12 states to not have done so. I know the governor has proposed this, but the legislature has so far refused.
So what you're saying is you have to address the root causes of poverty before you decide to pull back on unemployment benefits.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, unemployment benefits are often the sole reason why our clients are able to pay rent, keep the heat and hot water going in the winter, afford shoes and socks and clothes for their children. You know, these are critical benefits that provide a lifeline, a literal economic lifeline to people in the darkest times of their lives. And so to fathom taking it away and to imagine that that would somehow help people find jobs, it's fiction.
Abby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Abby Barlow-Wiley, Legislative and Compliance Director for Legal Action of Wisconsin. Now, political polarization of the pandemic hasn't spared Wisconsin school boards. Mask disputes, unruly crowds, shutdown meetings, board members faced recalls, and some have resigned over threats. That's led to charged local primaries on tomorrow's ballots. Madeline Fox has more.
Kathy Olig's first campaign to be a Menominee Falls school board member in 2019 feels simple now.
I purchased some yard signs. I talked to people about voting. I participated in the candidate forum. There was just one. And everything kind of went fairly smoothly.
But this year, there are 8 candidates for 3 open slots in Menominee Falls. So she's competing in our first primary.
I think that the schools have been put under scrutiny as a result of what's happening nationally.
That's true in a lot of communities, especially in the suburbs.
You know, as a former school board member, I ran 4 times. 2 I ran without any competition, and 2 I ran with a lot of competition. I think it ebbs and flows.
Terry Phillips is the executive director of the Southeast Wisconsin Schools Alliance. She says that while school board positions are nonpartisan, politics are playing a bigger role.
There are board members who are conservative Republicans who are being contested because they're not conservative enough, apparently. And so that's been so interesting to watch.
Part of that may have to do with national conservative groups looking to regain ground in increasingly competitive suburbs. Vladimir Kogan is a political science professor who studies state and local politics at Ohio State University.
Part of this is, I think, you know, a really rational and strategic effort by, I would say, primarily Republicans who see this opportunity, and probably rightly, right, that this, I do think this is a great opportunity for Republicans to win back suburbs that historically have been pretty red, but now are more and more blue.
Many primary candidates got involved over concerns about how their district was handling COVID-19. But they're getting a boost from national parties and political action committees, which can provide money, strategy, and help gathering signatures and getting the word out. Those were at play in the unusually large wave of recalls over the last 2 years. 17 districts saw recall attempts, including one against Butternut School Board member Gary Murdig in northern Wisconsin, who defeated a December challenge.
It kind of split the community a little bit, which is unfortunate because there are the pro-mask and anti-mask folks.
Murdig isn't up for election until next year, but Butternut will have school board primaries this year for other seats, which has been a rarity during his 31 years on the board.
I'm trying to think the last time we would have had a primary for school board is it's been a long time.
Murdig and others watching rural schools say board meetings are drawing fewer angry community members these days. But some wonder if debates over critical race theory will bring them back. Vladimir Kogan, the Ohio State political scientist, said school board clashes over national hot-button issues aren't new. Sex education, the Common Core, evolution, and voucher programs all cause similar uproar.
You know, there's always national conversations about education. But those are, in the past, were counterbalanced by local conversations about local issues. And I think that counterbalancing is going away.
There are fewer local newspapers to send reporters to school board meetings, so many communities don't know enough about local issues to take the focus off national debates. But Murdig says most school board business is local or deals with thorny regulatory questions, which can be frustrating for politicized candidates that win elections.
Once in a while, we'll have an issue that would have come up over the years, and sometimes it spurs interest in certain people running for the board, and they become a one-issue candidate. And then as soon as they get on the board, they kind of lose interest.
After the primaries narrow the field in some districts, all the school board races will go to general election on April 5th. Madeline Fox, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And just ahead, the State Capitol Report continues with Republican State Representative Jeremy Thiensfeld. We'll talk schools. What action do you want lawmakers to take on K-12 education? 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network.